May it please the court, my name is Scott Dunn, 24110. I'm representing the appellants Dan Cannon and Dan Yanovich. Today I'm also speaking on behalf of the other appellants, Tom Moore and the Friend Family Group. Now, for purposes of simplification, during my speaking to you today, I'll oftentimes refer to Bent Tree's deed of trust as A, the appellant's deeds of trust collectively as B, and the bank's deed of trust, the appellee's deed of trust as C. Now, fundamentally, this is a quiet title action. And the key question is, what title was up for auction and was purchased by Bent Tree in November of 2010 when it obtained the property, the foreclosure by A? Now, in Colorado, unlike many jurisdictions, there has to be one list of priority of liens. So to know what title will be conveyed at the end of the foreclosure, whether the title is redeemed or not. Now, under CRS 3838501, upon the expiration of all redemption periods, title to the property vests in the holder of the certificate of purchase or the holder of the last certificate of redemption, and the title is free and clear of all liens and encumbrances junior to the lien foreclosed. Now, in this case, A subordinated to C. Who was junior to B? So when A foreclosed, title vested in the certificate of purchase holder, subject to all liens senior to the lien foreclosed, including C and B, since B was senior to C. Now, this is consistent with the court's ruling in Popeating and the only rule that works in our Colorado Public Trustee foreclosure system, which provides post-sale redemption rights to junior lieners, which absolutely requires one list of priority. Now, no one is disputing the title that was auctioned, sold at A's foreclosure, and as it issued here today, is subject to C. And it's not disputed that B was senior to C, as C was recorded after B. The question for the bank is, how can title be subject to its lien, C, and not also be subject to the appellant's liens, B, when C was junior to B? Now, the bank's argument is that the subordination agreement between the bank and Bent Tree set up a separate list of priorities solely between Bent Tree and the bank, so that A was still senior to B while simultaneously being junior to C. So the title purchase of the foreclosure is subject to C while free and clear of B. Now, the bank has argued that such a rule causes no harm to the junior lieners, the appellants. However, the harm to a junior liener, the appellants, becomes apparent if we read the foreclosure statute on redemption. A redeeming liener can only acquire the same title as the purchaser at the sale. So if Bent Tree holds title subject to the bank's lien, then so would a redeeming party. Statute reads, in pertinent part, if redemption is made by a liener, the certificate of redemption, duly recorded, operates as an assignment to the liener of the estate and interest acquired by the purchaser at the sale. That's CRS 3838304. So under the bank's proposed rule, despite A being junior to C, B was still junior to A, and like any junior liener, would need to redeem in order to avoid losing its interest in the property. But if we accept that, if B needed to redeem as a lien junior to A to maintain an interest in the property, as argued by the bank, with A junior to C, then the title that the appellants B would have obtained after paying off $11 million to redeem A's title would, by statute, be subject to C's lien, even though the bank's lien C was recorded after the appellants. This is what the statute requires, and it makes clear that tremendous harm would be created if the bank's rule was accepted. Now, in response to the clear inequity of a redeeming B taking title subject to C, even though B recorded first, the bank has proposed, with no citation of authority, that C, their lien, was subject to being eliminated in A's foreclosure if the appellants had redeemed. The bank has stated any appellant could have at any time foreclosed out C or could have redeemed and caused C to disappear. That was in their reply brief at page 9. Now, while the appellants, B, could have, of course, foreclosed and eliminated the bank's lien, C, as a junior lien, how would C have disappeared by redemption by B after A's foreclosure when A is junior to the bank's lien. The bank has not said. Nothing is cited as to how this would occur, as it would not, as under the plain language of the foreclosure statute, the title, either sold or redeemed, would not be free of C's lien because C's lien was senior. Under CRS 3838-501, title is only free and clear of liens junior to the lien foreclosed, which C is not. A redemption by the appellants doesn't change the title that was available at the foreclosure. I mean, unless the bank can say how their lien, a lien senior to A, would disappear in the event of a redemption by the appellants in a foreclosure by A, then its argument for adoption of partial subordination in Colorado must fail, as otherwise they are calling for a rule that would gut the redemption rights of a junior liener by permitting the senior lien to move later recorded liens ahead of them. Nevertheless, the BIAC argues that its lien is where they're today, that its lien is good against Bentry, and it's good, they're saying it's good today, but presumably would be good against a third party had some other bidder purchased the property at the foreclosure. But had the appellants redeemed, it wouldn't be subject to their lien. So they're arguing without authority for multiple independent lists by which liens, the title obtained after foreclosure is subject to, would be different depending on whether it's a certificate of purchase holder or a certificate of redemption holder who ends up owning the property at the end of the sale. Now, the foreclosure statute says the exact opposite. You know, adoption of the bank's argument would ignore the express language of the public trustee foreclosure statute, which requires one list of priority to establish the title that will be obtained by either a purchaser or a redeeming party. Partial subordination cannot be reconciled with our system. Now,
Mr. Dunn, could I stop you a minute? I wanted to back up a little bit as you were arguing. The case law that's out there, it appears the majority approach is going to follow the partial subordination approach. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And the three reasons, I suppose, that the cases seem to adhere to have to do with not giving the junior lien holder a windfall. That's certainly one reason. In other words, moving B up. Second, B is not privity to the contract that is at issue. That would be a second reason. And then the third reason is that B remains unaffected. That you're in the B position, you remain in the B position. Now, could you address those?
Yes, just the bank hasn't cited anything to indicate that these other states, be it Utah, Indiana, Arizona, Texas, that any of them have post-sale redemption rights of junior lieners and non-judicial foreclosures like we have in Colorado. That law school professor used to tell me, is it a difference, but is it a difference that makes a difference? That's a difference that makes a whale of difference. Because if there is no redemption right, and you're just saying, how are we going to, that C is going to get the money rather than A, then it probably doesn't matter that much. But in Colorado, junior leaners don't just, it's not just where they get paid, they have the right to redeem. So it's a completely different
animal. So what I think they're arguing is the right to redeem happened at the foreclosure, which your clients did not involve themselves.
And related to that point, it's from the standpoint of redemption, we are either B
was either... Well, it's easier for me to say B and you started out there, so...
B was either ahead of A or it was behind A. But if it was behind A, it was also behind C. So to accept...
But the briefs are talking about a different A, I think, right? So that A, it would be, I think, A to C and then A... to be.
Yes, you're
right. I mean, it's hard to visualize this, but I think that's what they're arguing, and all of these policy reasons tied in with our statute, that's what I wanted you to address.
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree, it's confusing. Looking at our statute, partial subordination cannot be applied in Colorado without permitting junior leaners, the last lien, to jump ahead of everyone else. Because unquestionably, the bank's lien was ahead of the lien that was foreclosed. Therefore, the title that was sold at the foreclosure was subject to the bank's lien. Had we redeemed, the appellants redeemed, their argument accepts that it's okay for them to have to pay off the lien that was the only lien that they were junior to, and then take title subject to C, because if they needed to redeem, then they were behind C. Now, that's where, from our perspective, the only rule that can work, we would say we don't need to look at the policy from the standpoint of, unlike all these other jurisdictions, we have post-sale redemption rights. And looking at that statute, B either was ahead of A. When A moved behind C, it also moved behind B. Because if we accept that B was still behind A, then it was behind C, which completely compromises a junior leaner's redemption rights. Because by saying that, you're accepting that they can move the last recorded lien ahead of them. If our focus is on what was sold at that foreclosure sale, unquestionably the title that was sold was subject to C's lien. The only response that the bank has had is, well, they could have redeemed and it would have, in their words, disappeared. We're not aware of any citation of authority. How would their lien have disappeared at a foreclosure of a lien junior to it? Redemption doesn't change. It's the same title. And I will reserve the balance of mine.
Just a minute.
Yes, sir.
Based on your argument, this court really does not have to make a policy decision as to whether or not the state will follow complete or partial subrogation. Is that correct? I mean, your argument does not really go to what the approach should be.
We don't need to get to the underlying balance of the policy weighing that those jurisdictions that do not have a non-judicial foreclosure system like us. So we argue that, yes, I agree, Judge, that the only rule that is compatible with our system I don't think it's an overstatement to say completely compromising the redemption rights of junior leaner is to accept full subordination.
I understand your position.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have a minute and 35 seconds left.
Good afternoon. May it please
Could
the court.
You make sure, I don't know if you all can see that or if you're okay the way it's positioned.
It's page 191 from attachment A to the Tomar brief. It's from the Pope record as it was attached. Good afternoon. My name is Perry Glanis, and I'm here representing First Citizens. The first thing I just want to point out is that the entire argument you just heard from counsel is hypothetical. What would have, could have, might have happened if anybody could try to redeem? Because there were subordination agreements between everybody who was included in the letter B in his argument had subordination agreements. Demjanovic and Friend, actually Friend recorded first and then Demjanovic. Tomar came later. Demjanovic and Friend both subordinated to them. So that whole discussion of there being a clothesline that it's required that you hang everybody's rights on, and it has to be this two-dimensional line of relative interests. First of all, it's purely hypothetical in this case. It didn't happen.
Well, if we're trying to decide a policy issue as a matter of first impression, don't we have to take into consideration hypothetical situations that might arise in different cases based on the reasoning that we employ?
I don't think you can do that in this case. I don't think you can make a different decision based upon the facts of this case because of something that might have happened. Now, had the dispute come up, had, say, Tomar attempted to redeem, and the second CCB deed of trust come in and said, no, we're next. You can't redeem in front of us. Sure, then we have that posture before us, but that didn't happen. That didn't come up. They didn't try to redeem. So I think it's important. I mean, that's purely an advisory what would've, could've, should've, because we can't possibly know. If Tomar had attempted to redeem, what would that second, the Colorado Capital Bank, as he referred to it, or C, what position might they have taken? Well, what we do know is what did happen. And that is, as of June 24, 2009, everybody agrees that Tomar, Demyanovich, and Friend were all subordinate to the Colorado Capital Bank $11 million deed of trust. Nobody disputes that. Now, as I pointed out, Friend and Demyanovich were subordinate by virtue of an agreement. They had filed earlier in time, agreed to be subordinate. Now, what each of those parties expressly agreed was to be behind that $11 million debt and that $11 million deed of trust. I don't think there'd be any question if Colorado Capital Bank had had occasion to foreclose at that time, under that circumstance, they would have foreclosed out all of those entities. If all of those rights would have been gone, if they hadn't redeemed, like they didn't. Now, the issue before this court has to come down to this agreement. It's a subordination agreement. It's two whole pages long, and it occurred when Bentree purchased what was referred to as A, the first deed of trust that was in first position, and then they entered a subordination agreement where Colorado Capital Bank had loaned the money to Bentree to purchase that loan. Then, as security for that loan to purchase the loan, they were given a deed of trust. Those two parties expressly agreed between themselves that relative to one another, the second Colorado Capital Bank deed of trust would be senior to the first that is now owned by Bentree. So they agreed between themselves that as between each other, relative to one another, C would be senior to A. Now what didn't happen was A, Colorado Capital Bank's deed of trust, was never released. There was no release. It remained in place. Obviously that was part of its value. Now the other thing that is not in dispute, none of the other parties are mentioned in this subordination agreement. None of the other parties to this appeal are parties to that agreement. The other thing that's important is the trial court in its order found that none of those parties were a third party beneficiary of that agreement. And nobody disputed that. Nobody appealed that. Nobody disagreed with that. So as we come to this court, we have an agreement that has created a relative subordination between two parties. That agreement was not intended to benefit any of the appellants. That's what the court found. Nobody appealed it. But that notwithstanding, they seek an $11 million windfall solely on the basis of this agreement. Now they don't really argue, although in their briefs they argued strenuously that complete subordination was the law of Colorado. They seem to have moved off of that a bit. It's not, so I suppose we agree with that. But there is well-settled law in Colorado, and it's the law of third-party beneficiary. And that law depends upon a contract between private parties and its expressed intent, or the intent that can be gathered from the circumstances of the agreement. And then if you're not a third-party beneficiary, you're not impacted by that contract. You can't enforce it. You can't be benefited by it. You also can't be harmed by it. It's neutral as to you. That's the law. We cited E.B. Roberts. This rule was reaffirmed by the Colorado Supreme Court as recently as February of this year in S.K. Pridle versus Mid Valley Real Estate, 342 P3rd 868. And by this Court of Appeals in Cody Park Property Owners Association versus Harder, 251 P3rd page 1. But the key to the existing Colorado law is the intent of the parties to the agreement that's having the impact. Here, it's established, nobody appealed it, there was no intent to benefit these third parties. Now, there's a reason that complete subordination doesn't make any sense. First and foremost is, it would do violence to that third party beneficiary law. It would take this agreement, it would give it effect, except for the fact that it would imply a contrary intent. That's what all the cases on partial subordination find, is that that makes no sense. That we're going to take the intent of this type of contract alone and throw that out the window and ignore it only in this circumstance. Now, I think what's equally important is throughout the briefing, appellants have claimed that Pope followed complete subordination. Pope didn't follow complete subordination. Pope never mentions complete subordination. And in fact, if you read the decision in Pope, it's that Travis is the party in Pope. And what they're asking the court to do is reinstate them in a first position lien. And the reason for that is this. The party Travis in Pope did release its first position deed of trust. It released it. That's a big difference. Appellate's briefs try to use subordination and the word release interchangeably. Release, subordination, it's all the same. It's not. It's clearly not. So it says, this is in the record at page 93 of attachment A to the Tomar answer and reply brief. It says the court below found that Travis did release the original deed of trust. Page 191, we've blown up here, another reference to the releases were given. And it goes on, page 192 talks about it again in that same attachment A. Page 197 talks about it again in that same attachment A, as does page 198. Suffice it to say, Pope dealt with a case where the party who'd agreed to subordinate actually released his first position lien, re-recorded it in a junior position, and then came back to the court and said, I didn't need to do that. Please put me back. And the court said, I'm not moving you. That's not our job. I'm not moving you up and down the line. So that is not complete subordination. That is the absolute opposite of complete subordination. There was no release in this case. There was a private agreement between two parties that agreed as to their position relative to one another. Now, another thing I just want to point out quickly, because although appellants seem to have abandoned this in their argument at this point, the complete subordination law is based upon two treatise citations. If you look in the Blickenstaff versus Clay and Old Stone Mortgage versus New Georgia Plumbing, you'll see a cite to 51 Amger second of liens, section 55. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. It's changed. In 2000, section 55 was moved to section 73, as can be told by the correlation tables. But further, what happened was they rewrote it. And this is what it used to say. One who subordinates a first lien to a third lien makes his lien inferior to both the second and third liens. Old Andrew. New Andrew says, a subordination agreement is a contract by which a party holding a senior lien or other real property interest agrees to lower its priority in relation to that of another holding an interest in the same property. Private contract. It goes on to say, whether the language in an agreement affects a lien subordination ordinarily depends on the intent of the parties, as ascertained from the wording of the agreement, interpreted in the light of all the attending circumstances. That sounds much more like third-party beneficiary law than it does like the old Amter statement. That quote from the prior Amter is what both of those old cases were based upon. Now, further, Black's Law Dictionary cited, in fact, it's quoted in the Tomar brief, but it's the 6th edition from 1990. If you look at the 14th edition from 2014, you find a very different statement, and that is of a subordination clause. It says, in a legal instrument, a clause that explicitly acknowledges the one party's claim of interest is inferior to that of another party. Not of everybody, but another party. Now, that's what BCS, the Utah case that was decided 3 weeks ago, all the other partial subordination cases find, is that in essence, partial subordination is third-party beneficiary law that we've always had. Subordination agreements can be made between parties relative to one another. We do not have to have a clothesline upon which all of these interests hang in complete vacuum that is unassailable by agreement. Colorado courts from over 125 years have recognized you can make agreements regarding your lien position. So, for example, in this case, when we look at what happened, we can see that the Bent Tree, original Colorado Capital Bank, deed of trust was foreclosed. Even though it was filed after both Fred and Demjanovic, it was senior by agreement. So relative to those two, it was senior, they didn't redeem, therefore closed out. That deed of trust that was foreclosed was senior to Tomar, both by time of filing and by an express statement in the agreement. Tomar didn't redeem, therefore closed out. That first Colorado Capital Bank deed of trust, the Bent Tree deed of trust, when it came down to compare it relative to the second Colorado Capital Bank deed of trust, it was not senior by private agreement of those two parties. So relative to one another, it couldn't foreclose it out. So Bent Tree, with a credit bid, got the property subject to the Colorado Capital Bank deed of trust. Now the hypothetical of if they'd redeemed, if they hadn't, would then raise the question of, well, Tomar, are you senior to this second Colorado Capital Bank deed of trust? Well, yeah, sure they would. There was no agreement between them. They were filed prior in time. Yeah, of course, they're senior. They redeemed, they're out. That's it. That's what happened. And that's what should have happened. Now, the one thing that we think is not exactly accurate is when the court talks about things switching places. Nothing switched places. It's a matter of private agreement, relative position one to the other. And that's how it's done. If you have any questions, I'm obviously right here.
So are you saying that A never became C except by agreement between A and C?
Yeah, A never became C. Because if A had become C, yeah, A didn't become C. It would have had no value to the parties if that were the case. A was A and it stayed A. Thank you very much.
Just a couple of points. One of the last things that the appellee noted saying, had they redeemed, they're out. We had said in the question, how? We're not aware of how they would be out. The deed of trust that was being foreclosed was junior to the bank's deed. There's nothing in the statute that would say that if you redeem, if the appellants had to redeem, by definition, they would have to have been behind both C and A. At the end of the day, it's impossible to reconcile the bank's argument with the workings of our public trustee foreclosure statute. And they talked a lot about this is a private agreement. The fact that there are redemption rights of junior lienors, it makes the junior leaners part of the party because it unquestionably affects them. If A makes their deed of trust subject to C, then the deed then, and they still have to redeem, then they're getting title subject to C. That's what the statute says. Now, in regards to a windfall, the original lien that the appellants agreed to be behind was bid in full at the foreclosure. After they subordinated, for whatever business reason, they went ahead, they didn't bid a deficiency, so the one deed of trust that the appellants were behind has been paid in full, and they're getting the benefit of their bargain, and now they move up to first place. And my time is up. Do you have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.